Bill Mumy started as a child actor with memorable roles in The Twilight Zone and, of course, playing Will Robinson in Lost in Space. He is also an accomplished musician, releasing several albums, and was part of the group Barnes & Barnes, and even toured with America. Years after his stint on The Twilight Zone, he had an idea for the episode, Anthony Fremont. And this is Sci-Fi Talk, the podcast on how sci-fi, fantasy, horror, and comics help us explore our humanity. For Babylon 5 fans, he was known as Lanier. Here is Bill Mumy at a press conference at a sci-fi convention in the 1990s.
Like most of us have home movies of when we were kids and all, would you say that that's probably what it is, Lost in Space is for you? And as you look back, you sort of see yourself growing up as this, as you watch the old reruns?
On one hand, I have the opportunity to see myself in different productions from 1959 until now, but on the other hand, I had, you know, regular home movies just like everyone else, so there is a difference between the two, even though I think that kids are the purest form of actors. I mean, if you're playing cowboys and Indians, or if you're playing, you know, Zorro and the Comandante or whatever, you got me! That's the purest form of acting there is, so I have the best of both worlds there, you know, regular home movies and episodics.
There is more Sci-Fi Talk, so stay tuned.
What is the difference between being 30 years ago on Lost in Space and being on Babylon 5? They're both times.
Well, I don't have to go to school anymore, which is a great, you know, help to me. And I didn't have to wear a dress then either, so they kind of have their pros and cons. The difference, I mean, you know, I was basically the star of Lost in Space. I'm a supporting character on Babylon 5. There's a big difference in responsibility, and there's a huge difference in the amount of makeup that I wear as Lanier, as opposed to the little bit of powdering I had on Lost in Space as Will Robinson. Outside of the fact that they both took place in the future and they both took place off the planet Earth, there's very little similarities between the shows. Lost in Space started off to be an adventure series, but pretty much became a fantasy, often comedy, whereas Babylon 5 is firmly rooted in the sci-fi universe of reality, of that reality. So they're really different. It's harder to compare them beyond that. But I loved them both. I mean, I love them both.
Melissa? Have you always been a fan of science fiction?
I've always been a fan of adventure, fantasy, sci-fi stuff. My passion is, you know, superhero comic books. Julie Schwartz was here a minute ago, the great, the one and the only. That's my passion, you know, is superhero comic books. It was Zorro and Superman that got me sucked into wanting to be on television when I was a kid, and Will Robinson was like being a little superhero. Lanier, on the other hand, you know, has demonstrated these martial arts abilities, and he's a pretty powerful guy in his own way, so I'm just living out my childhood dreams.
Brendan,
tell us about the making of Fishheads.
Not a pretty story, but one that had to be told. The making of Fishheads. Well, like the song, the recording, or the film, they're all different. Well, you know, my partner in Barnes & Barnes, Robert Hamer, and I, it started off with a dinner, you know, in a restaurant where we ordered some fish and got the whole deal there. And he actually, Robert wrote the chorus, the Roly-Poly Fishheads, which I think he was getting from a W.C. Fields thing. And he wrote the chorus, and I wrote all the verses. You know, I wrote the I took a fish head out to see a movie, didn't have to pay to get it in verse. That's one of my favorite verses of all time that I've come up with. So recording that, we recorded it a couple different ways before we actually ended up sending that off to Dr. Demento. And it did, you know, become a big, it's still a very big favorite on the kids' radio and Demento's shows and stuff. Making the film was a lot of fun. It was Bill Paxton's first foray into filmmaking, and Bill was largely responsible for driving us to get it done. You know, he really wanted to do it. I mean, we did it on a very small budget, pushing around a Super 8 and 16 millimeter camera and a shopping cart and stuff for those interesting shots. Rocky Shank was the cinematographer who went on to direct the rest of our videos, most of them anyway. I'm very proud of it. You know, it's been on film festivals all over the world, and Rolling Stone called it one of the top 100 videos of all time. And I never like to call it a video because it's definitely a film. You know, it was shot and cut on film. So, but it's a lot of fun. And Barnes & Barnes are releasing our 8th CD this year on Rhino, working on it now. A bunch of really sick stuff coming your way.
you've been a childhood star, an adult actor. You've worked on other people's shows. You have your own shows now, Space Cases. Is there one direction that you haven't gone in life yet? Is that one path that you intend to go down?
You know, it's hard to answer that question because I have really worked in so many different arenas as an actor, as a writer, as a producer, as a musician, as a songwriter, as a performer of stuff, and as a supporting musician for other people. The one thing I've never done outside of a couple of Barnes & Barnes videos was really direct. And people are always asking me, the opportunity presents itself, you know, to do it. And I think I would do it well, but I haven't ever really had that burning urge to do it. And I think you have to have that passion to do it. And you know, there's a lot of homework to be done there in terms of calling your camera angles. I know I could work with all the actors and get the performances I want, but to really sit down and plan out my, you know, okay, I'm going to go to the over-the-shoulder here, then we're going to do this raking, you know, I mean, to really sit down and do that right requires a lot of work that it hasn't really challenged me to do it yet from my own heart. So that's the one thing I haven't done, and I don't know if I ever will, but otherwise I've had a lot of opportunities to do the other things. Appreciate that.
There is more Sci-Fi Talk, so stay tuned.
My least favorite Lost in Space episode would be the Great Vegetable Rebellion, which I think, on one hand, you almost have to call it your favorite because it's probably the best example of the worst television show ever made. So it's classic in that, in its awfulness, you know. And my favorite, there's a handful of those, you know. I like a lot of the first ones. Maybe Return to Earth, where Will went back to Earth because he really did go back to Earth, which is kind of cool, and he really did get something that saved them all from, you know, doom. So it was a big episode, and getting back to Earth was, when you think about it, that was cool. So that was probably my favorite.
Yeah, but Junkyard in Space. I have read somewhere that it could be one of your favorites.
Junkyard in Space?
Yeah.
No, not at all on my top 10 or top 20.
Okay.
No.
You mentioned Space Cases. How did that project come about for you? And working with Peter David, too.
Peter David and I have worked together on several different formats in the past. We've written comic books together, and we've written short stories together, and I respect Peter very much. I was taking a meeting at Nickelodeon to pitch a comic book that Miguel Ferrer and I have created called Tripto the Acid Dog to Nickelodeon, and in their wisdom, they decided that it wasn't exactly the right project for Nickelodeon, but they did say that they felt they would be very receptive to a Kids in Space project from me, which was all they said. So I left that meeting going, okay, you know, I can do that. I was writing the Lost in Space comic book at the time, and I was hosting a series for the Sci-Fi Channel called Inside Space. So I was kind of, this was before Babylon 5, and anyway, my creative juices were in space at the moment. So I started working on the idea for Space Cases, Kids in Space, whatever, and I called Peter right away because he's very prolific and he's very funny, and I like working with him a lot. He's a great guy. And we just developed it, you know, together and went back to them, and they started putting money on the table, and 3 years later we're on the air, and we wrote 10 of the first 13 and outlined the two of the others. So
one other quick follow-up, what was it like to work with Mark Hamill on the show?
Well, Mark and I have been very good friends for at least 10 years, and we've wanted to work together for a long time. And having the opportunity to write a part for the two of us, and, you know, he couldn't get out of it. I said, well, you say you want to do this, you know, here's some money, come do it. So we had a good time, and both Mark and I are big Beatle fans, so I just kind of wrote these Liverpudlian aliens, you know, gin and pal, to sit there and be air traffic controls. It was all right. I had a great time, you know. And Mark had a good time, too.
Yeah, that's good. What is your favorite, two-pronged question, your favorite science fiction movie of all time, followed by your favorite science fiction book?
Oof, that's hard. I think my favorite science fiction movie is The Day the Earth Stood Still. My favorite science fiction book, The Martian Chronicles, maybe.
Melissa, one more question.
How did you first get started
in writing? Well, I started writing songs when I was 10. you don't want to hear those, though. But I started writing songs when I was a kid, and, you know, and we all take, you know, creative writing classes or, you know, English English classes where you write short stories. I always enjoyed that. So, I mean, I started writing like everybody starts writing. You're asked to write, and you write. I was doing a television series in the mid-70s at Universal for NBC called Sunshine. A very short-lived show, 13 episodes, but we did like three movies of the week, too. And George Eckstein, the producer of that show, was very receptive to energy from the cast, and so I ended up writing an episode, one of those 13. It was my first opportunity to write for television, and he was very nice to let me do that, and I kept wanting to do it, and just kind of here we are today, for what it's worth.
Ted, you have one question.
Yeah, you ever been to the desert on a horse with no name?
Oh, have I been to the desert on a horse with none? Yes, I have. Countless times with, you know, Dewey Bunnell and Jerry Beckley on stage together, taking many a solo in that song. And I love working with Jerry and Dewey. They're wonderful musicians, great singers, really nice people. I think I've co-written 18 songs on their last five or six albums, produced a couple, played on all their records, and toured quite extensively with them.
What about a Bill album? Is that a possibility?
Well, the Generators, which is pretty much an outlet for my serious songwriting, did an album in 94. We're in the studio now working on the second one. Whenever we get the time to all get in there together, it's pretty hard. I hope we'll get a chance to finish that this year and find the right label to put it out. You know, I can't go to... And I'm not saying that if I could, they would buy it, but I'm not in a position to go to Geffen or Elektra or some major label now and say, here's my band, put a couple $100,000 behind it, and we'll go get in a bus and open for Hootie and the REMs for the next 6 months. Because I can't. You know, I'm doing a television series, Miguel Ferreira's doing a million projects, Gary Stockdale, who's the bass player, is scoring a bunch of shows. And so as much as music is, on one hand, the most important thing to me besides the welfare of my family, it has become something that has to take a back seat to other projects. I play all the time. The band plays locally in LA all the time, and I write and record quite often. So, also, to tell you the truth, you know, I'm 42 years old now, and when I was out on the road with Sean Cassidy, I was 25. When I was out with America, I was in my 30s. I don't have the same desire to get on a bus and go from city to city and, you know, be up all night long partying and all. I mean, you know, my recuperative powers are not what they used to be. So,
not like linear.
I'd like to, no, not like, I'm not, I don't have that Minbari system yet. I would love to play more often and I would love to make more records, but I'm grateful for the opportunities that present themselves.
Look for Bill Mumy in Agents of Project Blue Book, upcoming series. He was one of the most popular child actors of his time, and as an adult, a valuable piece of the Babylon 5 universe. Special thanks to Blaine Atkins. Sci-Fi Talk Plus has a special offer with over 900 episodes, uncut, and even special programs. Not to mention, you can also make your own playlist of all the episodes you want. The best part, it's free. Click on the link in the show notes for free lifetime access. But this special offer expires May 1st, so take advantage of it now. This is Tony Tolato.